Welcome to the choir room. There's always room for you if you're a fan of Glee. Then you're a friend of me.
Stands my suitcase and guitar in hand, and every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band.
This way, this stringing us along, along. Just know you're
home for the holidays, just like we promised. Welcome back, everybody, to the choir room as we are here for a special episode today. It is Thanksgiving week in real life, real time right now. So, of course, we are taking a stop back in on Glee Thanksgiving to check back in on this episode, revisit it, check out some things maybe we missed the first time, and talk about it all. So, of course, it's not just me here today. We have a special guest, but also my usual co-host who has still not yet followed me back on Twitter. But it's okay. Aman, how is it going today?
Wait, I thought I did follow you back. Did I not follow you back already?
At the end of the last podcast, you purposely unfollowed me, and since then, this is where we've been at.
My bad. I'm good. Yeah, Thanksgiving has always been that holiday for me that is like the precursor to the real bad bitch of the holiday season, and that's Christmas. But Thanksgiving is still a bad bitch within its own right, so I'm excited to be here and recapping for the second time this episode, and I'm wishing all of you all around the world, even if you don't celebrate, a happy Thanksgiving or a happy holiday season.
Yes, and happy Thanksgiving to all the Canadians out there who celebrated a couple months ago, and we kind of, you know, just figured we would keep the Thanksgiving episode for our Thanksgiving. It just, you know, makes sense. But either way, regardless, we have a special guest with us today, because anytime that alumni come back to McKinley, this person has to come by to talk about it all. Welcome back, Matt Gagan.
Thank you. It is good to be back. I am famously anti-Thanksgiving, but like you said, I do love Glee episodes where the alumni come back, so I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, one of the main reasons I think you and I are such good friends is because we dislike the same holidays and the same animals.
Wait, hold up. Okay, so when we were planning this episode, Matt was like, let's have some guests on for the Thanksgiving, or a guest on for the Thanksgiving episode. I was like, okay, cool, that's great. He suggests Matt Gagan. I'm like, yeah, sure, fine. I like Matt. And then I was like, how about we have like two guests? Because, you know, it's Thanksgiving. How about we like simulate our own Thanksgiving dinner on the podcast? And he was like, yeah, I don't really know because it can get a little bit crowded. So you mean to tell me that I forewent the possibility of having a second guest on this podcast for you to fill the slot with someone that doesn't even like the holiday that we're covering on the podcast?
Welcome to the anti-Thanksgiving podcast.
Look, I'm not doing this for Christmas, and it wasn't even intentional. It just happened to work out this way. Alumni were coming back. We haven't talked to Matt on his own in a bit, and I said, Matt's a perfect pick. And you said, absolutely, but we should also get somebody else, because I guess you thought Matt wasn't good enough, even though I...
No, that's not what I said. That is not what I said. I said we should crowd the podcast like a Thanksgiving dinner. Those were my words. But then you said no, and I was like, fine. But now, I'm like... Y'all are conspiring against me, because the both of you are talking about how you don't necessarily like Thanksgiving, and yet we're on a Thanksgiving podcast, and I just feel like I've been taking advantage of.
Look, we're not. Look, I had no intentions of coming in here, and I don't know that Matt does either, but we'll see. Of coming in here and bashing Thanksgiving by any means.
Your Twitter page was pulled up on my phone. I was just about to press the follow button. Now,
hopefully, by the end of this podcast, Aman also hates Thanksgiving. That's actually the goal of this.
Okay, look. So first of all, let's get this part out of the way first. Matt, as a guest on a podcast, as somebody who has guested on many different podcasts before, and absolutely, of course, no offense to other people that you have guested on with, like as recently as, you know, Rosie was on when we talked through the brand Steel with both you and her. Is it not a better experience as a guest to be the only guest on the podcast?
It definitely is. Again, not to disparage anyone that I've been a guest on with, you know, but it's easier to know, you know, when to jump in and talk. Where there's the more people there are, the more confusing it's going to be and more hectic it's going to be during the podcast. So I get right. Where you're coming from.
Right. And I mean, it's not even like Amanda and I can't speak to this either. Like, you know, being on Big Brother podcasts over the summer when there's like four people on, yeah. When the less people on, the more you know that you can jump in and the more fun you get to have. It's a little bit more intimate rather, you know, I don't even want to have more people around my table. Like, you know, I keep my circle small. I keep my table small. That's just me. But look, that's why Amanda and I get such good feedback because we're on two completely different ends of so many different things in life. But Aman, I really truly do not mean to completely take Thanksgiving and rip it apart. You are a big Thanksgiving guy besides the pre-Christmas of it all?
Yeah, I like Thanksgiving. I as a kid, it was like, you know, aside from it being a 2 days off of school, because it's always on Thursday, so you get that Thursday off and then you get that Friday off. I got to see my family, and I would vacillate between my mother's side of the family, where I would stay in Pittsburgh and they would come to Pittsburgh and we'd have Thanksgiving at my grandmother's place, or I would do Thanksgiving with my stepfather's side of the family, and we'd either travel to Maryland or Delaware, because I have one of my aunts was in Maryland, the other in my stepfather's parents were in Delaware. So I was always in three cities for a large portion of my childhood. It was just a lot of fun. My mom would always bake. I love like the day before Thanksgiving, because my mom was always in charge of the desserts. So she would bake these sugar cookies that she still bakes to this very day. And there is no store. There is no bakery. There is literally there is no one that can replicate my mom's recipe. And before she goes, which hopefully is not for a while, before she goes, I'm going to demand that she give me that recipe, because I cannot leave this earth without making those cookies myself. So yeah, I associate it with family. I associate it with those cookies. I associate it with travel and being in the car and listening to Christmas music on the way. I'm a big fan of all the holidays, really.
Well, yeah, that definitely sounds like a nice vibe. That sounds like a nice vibe if that were the case for all, but that's not the same situation for all. So, I mean, personally, you know, my experience has always been a little bit different of just, you know, there was a small group of us. We would get together. You know, it was nice to have everybody all around the same table, have everybody together. Let me just get this out of the way. This is not going to be a very fun Thanksgiving. This is the first Thanksgiving for my family that we're not going to be all together, because we can't anymore. But last Thanksgiving a year ago, this year is the last time that we were and ever will have been all together. So everybody's feeling a little bit down around here, but you know, we're gonna still try to do something for anybody who can, and just, you know, obviously in a safe way. So we're trying to do the best that we can. But Matt, your experience with Thanksgiving, I know, has been a little similar over the years, of just a smaller group, and it's just, again, not our favorite holiday.
Yeah, not really. I mean, Thanksgiving, like Amon said, back in the day when it meant a nice 4-day weekend, that was great. But then as I got older, and when I was in school, it meant going home for a week, which I, you know, no offense to my mom, who's going to listen to this podcast in a year and a half when she finally gets up to it. But I always prefer spending time with like my friends in Albany than I would with my family down here. Nothing against them. They're just, you know, not as fun. And it involves megabus trip back and forth, which is never fun. Amon mentioned, you know, positive, you know, feelings towards travel with
I was always
with the holidays, but not me. This means a 4-hour megabus trip home, back and forth, and then it's not something I really look forward to. Like, yeah, it's always just been me, my mom, my brother, and grandparents, and I saw my grandparents all the time anyway, so it wasn't really a special occasion. We'd be eating dinner at like 2:30 in the afternoon, which is crazy. I don't really,
which is such a white people thing. I don't understand that. That is so fucking weird.
I don't understand either. I always be like, why are we eating right now? And I mean, right now, like, since I don't want to brag or anything, but I am a practicing vegan right now, I can't really eat any Thanksgiving food. But even before, when I could eat Thanksgiving food, I don't like Thanksgiving food. I never really liked turkey. I don't like stuffing. I would always just have a salad and mashed potatoes, and that would be my Thanksgiving meal. And then you have to eat the leftovers for like a week after, and those are even worse. They just keep getting worse and worse the less fresh they are. I don't really, you know, care for football that much, so I didn't get pumped when there were football games on and like my grandpa was watching them. So there's just nothing for me. It's not my holiday.
Amon, what time do you eat?
Okay, my family, I've noticed as I've gotten a little older and the people that are already older than me that are still kind of in charge of Thanksgiving, because I'm not old enough to like have my own place, they're also getting older. So as I've been getting older, Thanksgiving meal has been trying to get a little earlier. But really, we always sit down like around 8 or 9 o'clock to eat.
Oh, wow.
7:59 if we're really trying.
That's later than a normal dinner for me.
No, that's kind of like, but that's the norm for me.
Okay.
Like, I Thanksgiving as well. I'd come home from school. I'd go to I'd either go to an after school program in which my parents would not get off of work until 5 or 6. They pick us up at 6, and then we probably have an hour or two before dinner would start. So 8 or 9, and then I'd be in bed an hour later. So that's it was.
I don't really, all right. I don't eat dinner. We don't eat dinner as a family anymore. I still live with my mom, but I don't eat dinner with my mom, partly because, she's been eating dinner. She was always big on the early dinner, 5:30 for some reason. I was always the first person that had to go home when I was hanging out with friends because I was eating dinner at 5 o'clock. Now sometimes she'll start heating up her dinner at 4:30. I'm like, I've just had lunch an hour before. And so I don't. And then for some reason, the bigger the holiday, the earlier you have to eat dinner in my family. So.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just maybe it's some kind of thing where family started being well, there's so much to do. You got to make sure you get it done early. The faster you get it done, especially if you run into any issues, you can always fix it later by having more time in the day. Have you ever, Amon, run into any issues where something goes wrong with the meal and then by 8 o'clock you're shit, we don't have this, we don't have that, or you just carry on with whatever you do have?
Well, I didn't really start contributing to the dinner until recently, after college, really. If there was anything, any mishaps, I never really knew about them. And like I said before, okay, my dad typically never really cooked, and my mom was the only one that did, and she usually was in charge of desserts. So if there was any mishaps with the food, we wouldn't know until we actually got there. But nothing that springs to mind. Nowadays, now that I'm involved, everyone loves a mac and cheese because a mac and cheese is thebomb.com. They say, don't trust the skinny chef, but you can trust this one, bitch, because I know what the fuck I am doing. Nowadays, I'm a little bit more involved with the cooking. And no, I haven't really ran into any mishaps yet. Not yet.
Well, let me ask you guys also on the topic of Thanksgiving or close to Thanksgiving. Anybody have any strong takes on Black Friday? Obviously, this year is not going to be what it usually is. But for me, the thing for the past, at least the past, maybe honestly, almost 10 years has been way more than Thanksgiving has been Black Friday. So obviously after Thanksgiving, everybody's, relaxing or whatever. But my attention throughout the entire Thanksgiving day is always on Black Friday. I would either have plans with my friends if we would be going to a mall, this or that, back, when we were first old enough or allowed enough to go out for those 12 a.m., midnight, whatever openings of stores, that was fun. But obviously that's cooled down over the years. But that's just from my perspective, Black Friday has always been the main event of that weekend. Matt, did you care about Black Friday at all?
I've never even acknowledged Black Friday as a thing in my life. I have had friends that have done we're going to go out and shop for Black Friday. I don't even see the appeal. It's to my understanding that these stores get very crowded and people get trampled to death. And I don't get me wrong, I love a good mall, but not if it's going to be obscenely crowded for,
it's just wild. Yeah,
I'm not gonna really buy anything. I apparently the deals are good, but there's, I mean, especially today, there's really no reason to go to a store when you could buy something online. So it's never been appealing to me at all. I'll go to the mall when there's no one there, as opposed to when everyone in the world is there.
That's the funny part for me, because I never do buy anything. I think the biggest deal that I ever got were a couple of beanies that I got from Aeropostale maybe 7 years ago. And I think I got them for $2 for $5, and I thought it was a great deal. I don't know. But that's the only thing that I specifically remember buying. The whole point of it for me was just the experience and getting to, have a random time to meet up with friends to go out. But that's obviously not happening this year. It hasn't happened much lately anyway. But Amon, any particular Black Friday memories for you?
I was growing up, no, I was never really that person. I remember waking up at like, I don't know, like 9 o'clock in the morning on Black Friday and wondering where my grandmother and my sister were. And of course, like, oh yeah, it's Black Friday. They would like get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and drive out to God knows where and be all about those deals. Like they were so about that. Now I kind of love the chaos of Black Friday as long as it's controlled chaos. Like I've been out once or twice and I just love seeing people just, you know, rushing around and getting deals. It's kind of just, it's kind of fun to watch. But with that being said, it has literally resulted in death, as Matt mentioned yeah. before. Like there was a security guard that got literally trampled to death when they opened the doors at a Target a couple years ago and they all swarmed in and killed this man. And it's like, now that poor family has to bury their fucking, you know, brother, uncle, father, whoever, every Black Friday because of this bullshit. It's just, it's crazy. But but that being said, no, not really. I kind of agree with you too. Like Cyber Monday is kind of more my shtick. I rarely want things to begin with. Like I was very materialistic as a kid. Now as an adult, not so much. Like I really don't, there's not a lot of things that I really, really want. And if there is something that I really want, then yeah, I'll just search for a deal until I can find a deal. And
well, yeah, that's been the thing for me. Like there's never like a list of things that I ever want, which even now, like if people are, you know, still asking me what I want for Christmas, it's kind of hard to answer because there's, and any time that I do just like want something, I will just go online and buy it. So I will immediately have that need filled. So there's never like any point in time where I have a list of things that I'm like, ooh, I really need to go out and buy these things.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Especially this year. I mean, here's a little PSA. If you're starting your Christmas shopping anytime soon or your holiday shopping anytime soon, buy local, buy from some small businesses that really need your support. I'm definitely trying to do that. So think about that before you get started. And that as well. Us as the small business that's keeping your ears entertained for the next however long and whatever. But yeah, so Black Friday, that's my thing. And I guess final thing before we talk about the episode is I'm trying to get the whole Thanksgiving experience here. Personally, I have very little experience with, but the night before Thanksgiving is often, especially for you two probably, who went away to college and had that experience. Any particular stories or anything stand out from the night before Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I used to like Thanksgiving Eve because it was the big day when, I mean, I liked it more when, before I turned 21, because a friend would just throw a party and all the friends that, you know, we hadn't seen because everyone goes off to their respective colleges would be back and we'd hang out and it would actually be fun. Once we all turned 21, people agree the thing to do is to go to the bars, and this has completely flipped my view on Thanksgiving Eve 180 because it is not fun at all. It's very expensive. It's a huge high school reunion every time, and the with each year that goes by, the less I care about people I went to high school with, so I don't want to see them. I hate small talk. I don't want to catch up with people, especially in a loud bar where I can't hear what they're saying. Anyway, the drinks are overpriced, the Uber rides are overpriced. It's cold because it's in the middle of November. It's much with the Black Friday thing. I don't want to go to a place where it's just completely overcrowded. And Thanksgiving Eve, I think, is the highest, you know, overcrowdedness of bars, you know, any day of the year that I can think of.
Yeah, I think I tried it literally once and I was like, this is not for me in general, let alone is this for me on one of the busiest days to be at wherever we were at that year. But yeah,
it's really
not,
bad.
Not my thing.
You have to shout at people to like talk to them. It was so much. What's wrong with just having a nice little, a small house party like the good old days? Those were fun. I just don't get the appeal.
Just not this year.
So yeah. I don't think I've ever really done anything like that before. I never really associated the day before Thanksgiving with anything until around high school, until I joined the theater department. And our director / teacher would host a Friendsgiving. And it always be like the last day of, it would be the day before Thanksgiving, so the last day of school before the break. And all the alumni from the musical department would come back. So people that had been in college or whatever would all come back. And we would stay after school and we'd decorate the classroom or the teacher's lounge or wherever we got permission to throw the party. And we'd all just bring food. And it was essentially just two Thanksgiving dinners back to back. And it was really, really fun. And we would do like, we'd get to see the alumni perform like old numbers from the old shows, and that was just a lot of fun. So that's kind of what I associate it with. And as far as like college is concerned, I would just go back and be the alumni. I never really like went to bars or anything like with outside of that with people, but maybe that's a new tradition that I'll start. I don't know.
Consider yourself lucky. Cool. Don't do it.
And don't start it anytime soon.
It sounds like two of you sad sacks. Like, you know what?
Oh my God.
When all this is over, I'm going to like fucking throw a Friendsgiving. I'm going to invite all of the internet friends and we're going to have a good time. And yeah, I'm going to change your views forever.
I genuinely think if that were the case, if it were friends from the internet, like the people that, you know, I've spent my time with in the past couple of years, I think I would have a lot more fun than anything that's happened in past years.
That would be a great time. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll plan it for 2021. Hopefully this
just the people that are around, you know, you get tired of the same people. Even like, but like obviously, you know, not including like my close friends that I would be with or anything, but like just like Matt said, like seeing people from high school, seeing people that you work with, it's just like, you know, how many times are you going to see the same people in a year? I don't know. Like if it were that group of people that we're talking about here, I think we'd have fun, but that's not the case. So that's that. But we'll talk more about Thanksgiving as we go along here, but let's get into the episode. I would have a lot more fun with Thanksgiving if it started off with me coming home with five of my closest friends that I just had won nationals with the year before, meeting together in the auditorium with this definitely not pre-planned song that we have going here of Homeward Bound and Home put together here. Where else to go with this song besides just, you know, bringing back all the love for it, playing it at the top of the show. I just, you know, I get chills from this song every time. And Matt, I don't know that you've been on the show before to express thoughts on it, but I know you're also a big fan.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to waste any time with this episode. We immediately jump into like the best song and moment of the episode in my eyes. It's just, like you said, it gives you chills. It gives me goosebumps like every time I watch or hear it, like. Just, it's the first time all the alumni are coming back, besides Rachel and Kurt, obviously, but, you know, we get enough of them anyway. But, so, we're seeing everyone back, they all sound great, they're all so happy to see each other, and I'm also happy to see them together. It's fantastic.
Yeah, the decision obviously to only have six of them here is not something that I think we ever went super deep into because, you know, we get that Rachel and Kurt are off in New York, but it's something about this song, this specific moment with these six people and the way that, you know, the song is obviously incredible. They sound amazing on it. It's a lot of people's in a lot of people's like top pantheon of Glee songs, definitely in mine. Just the fact that there's only six of them, like, you know, it's just Brittany's not there. Brittany obviously, you know, is now or still in the high school, but, you know, she's still friends with all these people. She's like, I mean, maybe she's in class, but I don't know. It's just something while I was watching it this time, I was like, maybe that's why this is so perfect, because it is a simpler version of it. Like, if Rachel and Kurt and Brittany and everybody here, would this be as impactful? I don't know. That's just something that I was thinking
I think
about.
It's special because it's kind of like the six people that you've grown to love throughout the first 3 years and you haven't really seen at all throughout the first 8 episodes. Like, you've gotten a little bit of Finn and Santana, and you'll see them, you know, a lot more as the season goes on, but I feel like you haven't really seen a lot of them so far. So just see these six people back together that you've probably, you know, missed a little bit for the first, you know, third or fourth of the season or however long
for sure.
It's been. It makes it very special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really captures that energy of home, you know, and Homeward Bound and all of that. It just, you know, these people that you haven't seen, and we have seen a few of them, but like they've been separated. So we've seen Santana already, we've seen Mercedes already, we've seen Mike Chang already, mm-hmm. We've yet to see Quinn, but we've seen Puck, of course we've seen Finn, but seeing them all together is the thing that really just pulls the magic out of the performance. My one editor's note about this is that I really just, Mercedes's entrance, I just wish, because like she comes in and she's shrouded in darkness. You obviously know that it's her, but like the light doesn't hit her face until the last possible second, and then the camera shifts back to Quinn, and I'm like, no, that should have been the moment where she comes in and sings. Like, I just wanted that. I was like, get ready to sing, girl, and then the camera goes away. But that's just like a little small editor's note that I have. But other than that, yeah, this is really, really fun.
And I can understand that. I'm just like, I was watching it and I'm just, you know, at this point, it's beyond the point of like, you know, enjoying it or not, because yes, I'm going to get goosebumps every time I watch it. And my heart just explodes with like love for this song and this performance and all six of them. It's just like, I don't know, when Mercedes comes in, I'm just like, I'm feeling so like warm and fuzzy. I'm like, oh, they're all here. And then when, you know, Mercedes is going to jump in a little bit after because Santana is singing right when Mercedes walks in.
Yeah, it feels weird. It just kind of feels like, okay.
But then when like Finn comes in off the side of the stage, and obviously, I don't know, it just like, it feels like I'm understanding the story of like Finn teaches here now. He's coming in, not like a special entrance. He's coming in like in his teacher outfit, essentially. And I don't know, it's just the whole thing. And then, you know, I don't even know why, like, why did they have the three separate groups, two separate groups of like Finn, Puck and Quinn on the stage, and then Mike Santana and Mercedes off on the, like, in the audience. Like, it doesn't seem like that was, you know, like there's an obvious reason for it, but the fact that there's, you know, on, they're on two opposite ends singing to each other, and then they come on the stage together, and like by the end of the song, you're like, wow, like they're home and they're looking at each other in the eyes, and just I don't know what it is about this song. They just nail all of it.
It can bring you to tears if you're in the right mood for it.
It's perfect.
I love that the first person we see is Quinn, because she's like the only person we haven't seen any of yet since she graduated. And I don't know, I've been listening to this song a lot lately, and it's not one that I really think of when people say, like, what are your favorite songs from Glee? But I think I might need to reconsider it, because every, like I said, I've been listening to a lot, and every time it comes on, I just get the goosebumps. It's just such a powerful performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still working through, you know, obviously our rankings and all that kind of stuff. But whenever we end up getting to that final ranking of like our top songs from the whole show, I wouldn't be surprised if this makes top 20, even top 10.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do a ranking of my own soon.
I'm excited to hear that. We'll do a special podcast where you reveal yours. Yes. We'll have every guest that we've ever had come on and reveal their top 20 songs.
This podcast could go on forever if you do that.
Honestly, yeah, I don't see why not. We're going to eventually see the alumni head over to Breadsticks. Obviously, they're talking about how Rachel and Kurt aren't here, but they're trying to focus on the people that are here. Quinn is talking about how Rachel, you know, keeps contacting her, saying, like, why haven't you used your train ticket yet? Like, I'm trying to hang out with you.
Because they are in love.
I'm trying to get straight A's. They are in love. I'm trying to spend the holidays together, or at least some time together. But yeah, just nice to see everybody all together. Nice to see everybody at Breadsticks. It seems like a smaller table than usual. At Breadsticks. I don't know why it seemed like they were all like squeezed. Yeah,
there's
into
just
that
more
booth.
People. We've just never seen that many people packed away inside one of those booths before.
It looked like it could have been a scene from like Friends, as you know, I've seen many episodes of Friends, but just felt like that kind of vibe, like a sitcom could have been coming out of that. But I don't know. Still, just like I said, nice to see everybody together, and they're going to be around throughout the whole
thing. Wish the world before COVID. What the fuck, man?
Ugh. Yeah, we've been there before. We will be back there one day. Just a little more patience we all need, and we'll be back around that table with all of our friends. Obviously, the other side of things this episode, aside from the alumni, is going to be all about Mon's favorite character, Marley Rose.
Fuck her. Okay, this is actually kind of sweet. I kind of like this scene with Marley. It's a bit of a flashback. She remembers one of her first times singing on stage. She's wanted to be a singer for as long as she can remember. It's just been a dream of hers, and she just does not want to disappoint the Glee Club, because she will be taking center stage at sectionals, and she knows that it's all, you know, depending on her. But she hasn't been eating in the same breath, because Kitty has been telling her that she's a fat bitch. So now she's been just eating Tic Tacs or whatever small candy she can get her hands on. And I don't know how she figures she's going to be able to manage sectionals if she can't even put food in her stomach. But it's still a very endearing scene nonetheless.
Something I hadn't really thought about before, the fact that this entire storyline for Marley is all about how she's, you know, Kitty's getting her to not eat and to purge and all that kind of stuff as she's getting ready for sectionals, which lands on the day, the one day a year that people are known for eating a lot of food. So just a little strange that ends up lining up that way. I don't know if anything was intentional by that means. I mean, probably not. They just kind of, you know, this is when the story happened. I don't know. Just something that I picked up on. And we talked about it at the end of the last time we talked about this episode, when we were obviously going through it all. The fact that this all happens, right, Amon, on Thanksgiving Day, the sectionals?
Yes. This all... Wait. Ask that again? I'm sorry.
This whole... The sectionals happens on Thanksgiving Day?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. This isn't... They kind of like...
Like Rachel said, they thought they could somewhere.
Well, yeah, they kind of answer that a little in the scene in the apartment, where it's like, oh, they probably figure that everyone's back so they can sell more tickets. But okay, why exactly on Thanksgiving Day? Because I feel like the people who are back are spending time with their family on Thanksgiving Day, you know, with the Thanksgiving festivities. Why not have it, you know, the day after, like on a Friday night when everyone is still in town and is more likely to be wanting to do something?
Well, maybe
to have everything exactly on to have everything exactly on Thanksgiving Day makes no sense.
Maybe it's because Ohio is full of white people, and white people eat Thanksgiving at 2:30,
and then want to see a performance afterwards.
And then they go.
You're gonna be watching football. They're gonna be watching football afterwards.
Are the McKinley Titans playing a football game after this? I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know.
But like we were talking, I think we said last time that they probably did this in the afternoon and then they were able to, you know, go home for Thanksgiving afterwards. But still, none of it makes sense. Like, why? Like, the school is closed. It's Thanksgiving. Nobody, like, there's still people that have to work this event to make sure it's not just people like having a fun time. Like, some people are, but it doesn't make any sense for this to have been taking place on Thanksgiving at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Black Friday.
I mean, people do weird things on Thanksgiving. Some people don't even have Thanksgiving dinner at all. Some of them go out to eat on Thanksgiving instead. Some of them go see movies on Thanksgiving.
But to make the
assumption that, like, oh, let's have it on Thanksgiving Day because that's the day people are going to want to come. I don't think it's good business.
Well, I mean,
like, sorry to the New Directions and the Warblers. You cannot travel to see your families back when traveling to see your family was a thing.
But that's
you can't do that.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, oh, that's true. That is true because they're going to have to travel to go over there. That's true. But I guess they figure people are going to, you know, if you have three schools there that are performing, all of their families are going to have to come and see. Like, they're not going to abandon their kids on Thanksgiving. So
my family's, whenever we had shows going on, not that I was in them, obviously, I was behind the scenes as I've mentioned, but like my family's, if they had other things going on and they didn't come home just to see the production that we had been working on, even though I had been working on it for a long time and I was very proud of what we had all done, you know, if people had other things going on, like other plans or whatever, they're not specifically coming home for that. So, people probably missed out on some Thanksgiving dinners just to be at the Warblers performance of Whistle. Like, that, I don't know. So, whatever. That's their problem that they had to deal with at the time, and that is what it is. But we go to the choir room, and Finn has all of the alumni with them. He's going to pair them all up. Obviously, some of the pairs make sense. Putting Mike with Ryder, I think, because, you know, he's trying to Ryder's like the dance, the one that they're trying to get to dance here. Jake and his brother Puck, of course, together. You get Santana and Marley, which is not the obvious pair. That's like a little bit like two opposite ends of the spectrum of characters, so a little surprise there. But then Quinn and Kitty, which is a very fun pairing with those two. What does she say to her when she? I don't even remember
who. Kitty and Quinn.
Yeah.
I don't think she says anything to her quite yet. She just hugs her like really, like.
Oh yeah, and then but Quinn has that reaction. She's like, oh, okay. Mercedes and Unique, and Unique is very excited, and Brittany's talking about, oh, I knew it. Mercedes was cloned, so. There's that. They're all grouped together here. Finn is like, your mentors are here to help you with whatever you need. Singing, dancing, birth control, Quinn says. And yeah, it's just nice to see everybody all there together. And right before we're going to get this Santana monologue, of course, not monologue much, but like it's been too long. She's been too nice to everybody. And now she's got to make a little bit of a dig to Finn, who has this idea about doing Gangnam Style for sectional. She's like, yeah, I know you look good now. You're not smirking as much as you used to, but there's still something wrong with you when you have these stupid ideas. So
she just has to cut him down here. It's like, damn, Santana, in front of all these newbies. Come on. Like,
she has a point. This was a pretty stupid idea.
This was not a bad, I will say this until the day that I die. This was a good, solid performance. The song was popular at the time.
Amon is defending the New Directions for having their show on Thanksgiving Day. He's defending them for performing Gangnam Style. You were just a...
Well, they didn't plan it for Thanksgiving Day. That was the National Show Choir Board.
They can do no wrong in your eyes.
The National Show Choir Board.
You were the number one New Directions apologist.
Those are the ones that made these kids perform on Thanksgiving for God knows what reason. But for Gangnam Style, come on. This was a solid performance. It was such a crowd pleaser. They even had confetti. Like, it was such a vocal adrenaline style performance. Like, if vocal adrenaline had done this, we would be like saying, oh my god, this is like the best song ever. Like, they killed it. But because it's the New Directions, everybody's just like, this is stupid. No, this was a good performance, and we didn't get to see the rest of the set because Marley's dumbass, you know, decided to faint.
We can argue about this later. We can argue about this for hours.
Yeah, we have before. We could continue. I'm sure it'll come up again at the end of the podcast, as it'll definitely be in contention for some of our least favorite songs. But I don't know about Amon's. Definitely not Amon's. I don't know. Let's circle back to it when we get to sectionals. But for now, it's just obviously we're going to see the guys training for the dance and all that. Jake and Ryder. Jake, we actually just talked about all this, Amon, with Jake's character study about how he was, you know, going out of his way to make sure that Ryder was happy and doing his dance solo that he deserved. I mean, Ryder actually didn't seem like the worst option for the dance. Like, I don't know. It was obviously small moves and everything like that. And we knew what Jake can do. But when they were having that little mini dance camp, I was like, okay, for some reason, I had a memory of Ryder Ryder being like awful, and they just did it with him because they were like, there's no better options and Jake wasn't stepping forward. But I don't know, just noticed that Ryder wasn't completely terrible.
Yeah, he was
I think that he handled this with as much class as he could, you know. I mean, and Jake was imploring him, like, look, I was not going to just be an asshole tomorrow. Like, I know that you think that I'm this guy. I'm really not. Now you know that because of what I did for you with the whole dyslexia thing. So just, you know, give me a shot here. Like, I'm giving you a shot, so give me a shot. And I think, Ryder, I mean, you really have no choice other than to be like, you know what, you're right. You're right. Like, I like your shout, too, but, you know.
And shout out to Sam. Yeah, and shout out to Sam this whole time, who is really trying to make the white chocolate comeback of the year. As he volunteers, he's like, oh, I'll do the dance. And then he steps up at a dance camp here, and everyone's looking at him like, Sam, what is wrong with you?
Yes, you know how much I love this idiot season four, Sam.
No. Yeah, you you definitely don't love season four, Sam.
Glad we don't get a lot of this.
He has to realize that those moves don't work if his shirt isn't off. Like, if you're fully clothed doing that shit, you look like an idiot.
Mm-hmm. Mercedes was literally, I mean, it was a cute little Sam Sadies moment before the real Sam Sadies moments are going to come later on. No. She's like, oh no. Not happening.
She knows she likes it, low-key. She likes it.
She does. Let's cut over to New York. Let's talk about these losers up in New York that are refusing to go home and enjoy happiness with their families. No, that's not fair. They're doing what I guess Matt would have hoped to have done for years if he stayed at Albany rather than coming home.
Yeah, I wish the dorms I was living in gave me this option to just stay. Like, I get them not wanting to go home, especially right away. Like, they're freshmen in college. They just got there, or whatever Kurt's doing. But he still just got in New York. So
the squatter.
You know, I get not wanting to go home. I would have, like, loved to stay where I was going to school and not have to come home if that was an option. But also, it does seem like a pretty good reason for them to go home. Like, all of their friends are coming and in a very important sectionals competition or whatever. And apparently they, like, all promised to come back on Thanksgiving. So I could see it both ways. I could see them wanting to stay, but also, you know, why they probably should have just gone home to see their friends.
Right. And Rachel's definitely going to be in contention for my shoe star of this episode. Wow. There's not a whole lot of options, but she's very subtly trying to, like, manipulate Kurt into, like, wanting to stay there with her. As, like, he even makes a comment here. He's like, yeah, no, just because it's sectionals and all of our friends are home and I do miss my dad, I guess we'll have a fun time here. And she's like, no, we will have a great time here. Like, we're going to have each other and our dreams and this and that. And Kurt literally says, he's like, all right, it's not worth it to fight with you about this. It's not worth it. I'm just going to drink the Rachel Kool-Aid and go along with this, whatever we have planned here. And then, of course, later on, we're going to see him on the phone with Blaine, obviously missing him a lot and all of that when that happens. Kurt would have loved to go home if Rachel had been down, but he's being, like, a good friend here. Like, if he didn't get the gold star for this episode, we gave Amon gave his to Santana. I gave mine to Jake in this episode, the first watch. But Kurt could have potentially been in contention. I don't know. It's just just Rachel, like, ugh, bleh.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good observation, because the only reason that, obviously, Rachel, like, your dads are there. Like, the kids are not the only reason for you to go back. But the thing is Kurt is, like, well-liked by pretty much everyone. Rachel, however, is not. So she's pissed off about Brody. So she'd rather just, like, you know, try and throw her own pity party for Thanksgiving like she did for prom a year ago. And keep Kurt there with her, because she knows that, you know, going home isn't, like, exactly, like, the best thing for her to do, because a lot of people don't really like her as it is. So, of course, you're going to try and keep Kurt there with you. And I felt bad for Kurt. It's like, yeah, like, you miss your dad, too. Like, you need to go home. Like, they should have went home. Like, you're not, like, this is your first Thanksgiving away and you're staying, like, you're not coming. Like, come on.
Kurt's going to see his dad in a month for Christmas. Let's relax.
But so what? So what?
You, like, give him a phone call.
They're not far. They could have easily hopped on that magical express that takes them back and forth. But, you know, the breakup just happened.
From fucking New York to Ohio cannot be more than $200. Go home.
That's a lot for a college kid.
Have you seen their apartment?
What? That's true.
If it's even an apartment at this point, if you can call it that.
Go home.
Yeah, I would have supported them going home. So yeah, Rachel in contention for that when we get there.
Listen, like I said, I see it both ways. Whatever makes them happy.
Whatever makes them happy. Later on, we're going to see more with Rachel as Brody comes in to teach the dance class for the day. Cassie is not feeling well, so she didn't want to come in. Brody is talking about how he thinks that she's just hungover. And noticeably, Rachel is pretty annoyed with Brody. Brody recently, as two episodes ago, I think it was, in Gleece, had slept with Cassie, and Rachel found out about it, and that didn't go too well for both of them. But they have Brody's trying to, you know, talk to her about how they should be adults about this. Like, we're not in high school anymore. We're making adult choices. You chose to go home. You said you didn't want to be here. I did what I wanted to do. It's not like they were an item. So valid points on his end, which it's going to be kind of like a Brody thing all throughout Brody's time on the show, of like him making kind of reasonable things that he's saying, and then people being like, no, you suck, shut up. So I don't know. Matt, you haven't talked about Brody at all.
No, I don't think, I mean, I don't have anything against Brody, but I don't think much of him. I feel like he's one of the more forgettable people for me. I just know that he had a thing with Rachel in season four, but, you know, good for him here. He walks into this class being completely despised by Rachel, and then by the end of one dance, he ends up scoring an invite to Orphan's Thanksgiving. So, he did a pretty good job with laying out the reasons why he wasn't in the wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I never quite, you know, shipped them to be a permanent fixture by any means, but I still maintain that I think he was good to be by her side as she learned all about, you know, adult life in New York, or college life in New York, or whatever. I think he was a good first boyfriend, if you call it, whatever they were. And then obviously things get a little bit messy at the end, and now I'm picturing Finn and Brody in that hotel room where Finn was like, "You're gonna leave tonight."
Yeah, Brody was fine. I think I just I never really got the idea that he would be like a long-term person. Like, he was just going to be like a recurring character that's here for a few episodes, and then eventually something will happen where he disappears from the show forever, and that's pretty much exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same with Cassie, obviously, just kind of like around, and same with Isabel, who just kind of stops by and is only there for a bit, as of course her and Kurt are working together. Kurt, we get a scene of him back with Isabel at their office, and he's like shutting the lights on her. Long story short, he's going to end up inviting Isabel over for their Thanksgiving, their orphan Thanksgiving in Bushwick, of course, and she's down for the idea, and Kurt has no idea what's in store for him.
Yeah. She really takes it upon herself to invite like the whole season, like the whole cast of season 7 of Drag Race or some shit.
Season 7.
I can't remember which.
Shangela is definitely on seasons 2 and 3, right? Not anywhere near season 7, but it's fine. The one person who podcasts about Drag Race.
I was trying to make a joke and it just came out wrong, okay? I'm well aware of the fact that Shangela is not on season 7.
All right.
I love the Isabel and Kurt scenes. It's like, you know, she's obviously like the fairy godmother, and I like this character in general, especially as we're going to get to the end of the season in season 4 when she has that moment with both Santana and Kurt, and a little bit of Rachel as well. She's just like the whole time, you know, these three are learning, you know, their new lives, whether it's together, their new lives individually in New York. And Isabel just like at random moments tries to like help bring them some guidance and some light. I don't know. She's just such a nice, pleasant person.
I think her advice is really sound as well. I mean, a lot of the time whenever we are hurting and someone has hurt us, some of that is us holding on to the pain when really you need to be able to accept someone's apology or at least forgive them. You don't have to forget what they've done. You just have to like let go of that pain, because holding on to it is just, it just eats away at you. It just makes you a miserable person. So sometimes you just need the closure, even if you don't want it, or even if you don't think that other person deserves it. Like, you have to let that go, or else you're never going to, you can't move forward if you don't let it go. So I think that's really sound advice.
I'm happy for Kurt that he has this fairy godmother in his life, but I cannot even imagine being this close to your boss in any situation. So to me, it's just a literal crazy person move to invite your boss to Thanksgiving, but I guess it makes sense for Kurt in this situation. And what a power move by his boss to turn their little quaint little Thanksgiving get together into a huge party.
Yeah. actually, let's swing back around to that because there's so much happening at the school that I've kind of strolled on past setting up what's going on in New York. But that's such a big scene, and I'm excited to talk about it again. We previously, of course, had Alex Conti on the podcast to talk about that, and I know she was a big fan. And it's just fun to watch that back every single time, especially like closer to Thanksgiving. I'm like, okay, if this was Thanksgiving. Okay, let me hold off on that. Like I said, I was going to. But let's go back to the school for a bit. Matt, we had you on to talk about season two with one of the times that the Unholy Trinity is going to get together when they did Problem together. Let's swing back around to talk about when they do Come See About Me. We know how Amon feels about it. He really loves this performance. Where does this one stack up to you with some of the others?
Yes, I also really love this performance. It's not, you know, I'm not as high on it as the other one just because I'm not as familiar with the song to begin with. But it you know, the Unholy Trinity could perform the phone book and I'd still love it. So I just couldn't stop watching them. I'm so happy they're reunited. They're so happy to be reunited. And like I said, I just can't stop watching them, and anything that these three girls are going to do, I'll be interested in. So a plus in my book.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, Amon, this was your favorite of the episode, right? I can pull it back up, but you might remember off the top of your head. Yep. It was your favorite of the episode. Cause you love the song.
I love this song so much. And no matter what you do or say, I'm gonna love you anyway. Keep on crying, baby, for you. Keep on sighing, baby, for you. So come on, hurry. Come on, boy, and see about me. Come see about me.
Yeah, see, Amon is clearly very familiar with this song, so I understand how it probably ranks much higher for him than it does for me. But we can all agree that it's still great.
It's still great.
I listen to this song on Thanksgiving now because of this episode.
I love it. Love the tradition.
I just love the way that they describe it. They're like, oh yeah, we could just, you know, pull something together and an entire like choreographed. Yeah, I mean, hey, that's Glee, but like it's still just incredible the stuff that these three can pull off when they're better together. They're just
absolutely
so much fun. And everybody's enjoying it as well.
So good for her little small solo at the end. Like, her voice is just so, I just love Naya Rivera's voice. But yeah, all three of them together just sound so good. And the fact that they are, you know, back to dancing together as if no time has passed at all. And quite a lot of time has passed, because not only is it, you know, from the end of the senior year, but for a bit of their senior year, Quinn was a fucking crazy person. So she wasn't with them anyway. You know what I mean? So it's been some time. And yeah. From the car crash, she rises.
Matt, do you have any theories about where Mercedes has gone in this time? We haven't been able to locate her whereabouts in this moment in time. She was there at the beginning. All the guys are off at dance camp, but where's Mercedes right now?
Oh, is Mercedes not here? I guess I didn't even notice that. I just figured that all the girls were there. What could she possibly be doing?
That's the question. We haven't been able to get an answer.
Creepily watching Sam's dance moves backstage?
That's possible. I mean,
falling in love all over again.
Like she's the mentor of Unique in this episode, and Unique is here. Unique with everybody else watching.
I have no idea what Mercedes could be up to.
And it's funny because later in the episode, we're going to see that Unique has apparently been gone for a bit because her parents didn't want her performing in the number or wearing, you know, what she was planning to wear on stage, as if it was like the first time she was doing it or whatever. But no, I guess she switched schools and that's what they were concerned about. But then Mercedes has a line towards the end where she's like, oh, welcome back, Unique. And I'm like, welcome back, Unique. Welcome back, Mercedes. Where have you been?
That's where Mercedes went. When am I at? Mercedes was probably like cursing out Unique's parents, saying like, listen, Unique's going to dress however she wants in school. And if you have a problem with that, then you're gonna have to deal with me.
Yeah, like Unique has literally been in the entire episode. It's like some bizarro, like maybe their writing is, maybe they're acknowledging the Britney mixing up the two of it all. And when they say welcome back, Unique, they're really meaning to talk about Mercedes, because like I said, Mercedes is the one that's not been there for since the beginning to whenever she shows back up. So I don't know, maybe there's something deeper here that we're uncovering.
Yeah, this is probably a not. Conspiracy theory that goes all the way to the top.
Yes. So it's a great number, of course.
Tana's Mexican third eye slides into place when she sees Marley looking like she's going to be sick. And of course, Marley plays it off saying she's just tired, but then goes to go get sick.
Yeah.
I just love how she's able to suss that out immediately. And Quinn couldn't be bothered because fucking Kitty is, of course, about to go and, you know, just flatter
give her the lowdown. Yeah. Yeah, we get this Quinn fan Kitty fangirling over Quinn thing by the locker where she has the "What will Quinn Fabre do" in her locker, which, I mean, I also might have had in my locker, but we don't have to talk about that. And Quinn is like, "Oh, it's amazing. Like, this is so cool to have people still liking that, like, remember you and think about you." And, you know, Kitty's like, "Not just remember you. Like I think every day, like what will Quinn do? We worship you." And it's a very cute scene between these two. But yeah, then Kitty is going to lay in some lies and manipulation to Quinn herself and tell her that, yeah, Jake is awful. He's trying to pressure her to swipe her V card with him. And, you know, if anybody knows the dangers of a Puckerman mixing with a good girl, it's you, Quinn. And Quinn's like, "Oh no, not happening this time."
Kitty is just ruthless, man. Ruthless.
Yeah, how could you really,
you just did all of this flattery to Quinn, talking about how much you love her, and then you lie to her face.
You're Quinn Fabre, and I idolize you. You're Cheerios royalty.
Well, the question, what would Quinn Fabre do? This is probably what Quinn Fabre would have done 2 years ago.
WWQFD. Kitty,
like,
really, yeah. Really believes in that. So, I mean, she's really able to manipulate her idol on this one, because Quinn really, really buys into it. I get why she would.
But Quinn, this is more to Diana Agron's influence over the character, but Quinn, she genuinely, was in love with Finn. You know what I mean? So I can understand what she did was wrong half the time. I understood the motivation behind it. What the hell is Kitty's motivation other than just being a bitch? I mean, even Sue was like, she's just like Quinn Fabre, except she's just, like, not manic depressive or, like, in and out of the hospital with babies or whatever the hell. And yes, that's, like, a comedic way of saying she's just like Quinn, except she's just a bitch, and that's it. Like, that's it. Like, she's my new head bitch, and that's what it is. You're going to see what you get. You know what I mean? And I just feel like she's so much worse than Quinn. So much
worse. Pour one out for the lack of Kitty Wilde development.
Wow.
Let's all mourn for that. Yeah, because if there was more to know about Kitty, and if there was, like, a deeper look in the way that, you know, obviously Quinn has throughout her three seasons, Kitty only gets one and a half season, and then, you know, season six has nothing to do with anything about herself. It's like, she gets that one scene of like, "Oh, you do love to dance, don't you? You do love to sing. You should come back to Glee." And it's like, yes, that's always been what I love to do. It's like, okay, there's our character development to close things out on Kitty. But yeah, if we had more, it might have been a little bit more worthwhile. But then they cut ahead. Kitty's not around for this one, but Puck, Jake, Quinn, and Marley are going to meet back up in the hallway. No, is Marley there? Who is there? I've seen this scene a million times. It's not just who's by Quinn's side. Is it just Quinn?
It's just Quinn.
It's just Quinn.
It's just Quinn. That's why I can't think of who's by her side. Okay. Yeah. When we get Loopy Quinn, we get Crazy Quinn, whatever Puck wants to call her, because this irrational state that she has is apparently only reserved for Puckermans. And she's like coming down on Jake, and Jake's like, "Who are you? Like, I know who you are, but like, what is this attack?"
Yeah, Quinn's being really unfair to him right now.
Like, they've never talked, they've never met, they don't know anything about each other.
It is kind of a crazy move for Quinn to just go immediately up to him, especially with Puck there. I mean, if you were that concerned, Quinn, why don't you go talk to Marley?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because she's supposed to be with you in the situation, right? Go talk to her. Why are you bringing this heat to fucking Jake?
I get why, kind of get where Quinn's coming from, but to just go up to this poor kid that you've never talked to in your life and just assume you know everything about him and start like cursing him out in the middle of the hallway, not a great look for Quinn.
Yeah, it's just strange. I mean, like, at the beginning of the episode, okay, let's like back it up even more to like the end of season three, when Jake's not there, Quinn and Puck are going to end on like a good note. They, you know, are supportive of each other. They're talking about how they're both, you know, Puck's like, "You're going to be the one that gets out of this town." Quinn's the one that gives Puck the kiss that sends him through to finishing his test and getting it done, and, you know, going all about graduating and everything like that. And then we get to season four. Seems like things aren't as great as they were, but then we get to the beginning of this episode. They're holding hands for a brief bit at the beginning of Homeward Bound Home. And now here we are of her like coming after the Puckermans again. So I don't know. I guess just being in the halls of McKinley High has got her like back to the old mindset of like, oh, Puck is the enemy, I hate him.
Yeah,
so.
Katie's really doing some work with that.
I mean, you were just singing Homeward Bound. I'm back for the holidays, just like we promised. I love all you guys.
Yeah, but like Matt said, as soon as you get back into those hallways, you know, you regress back to your high school self.
That's why I don't go back to those hallways.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I always, I think about this all the time. Like if I right now, because Matt, you're talking about like, you know, you did run into people from high school when you would go out, like whenever. I don't have that issue. I never would run into people, like, very rarely. Maybe they would come by like my job and I would see them there or whatever, but I don't see people from high school very often at all. It's been 8 years since graduation, which is disgusting. Disgusting to think about.
It is disgusting.
but if I did see them, I always wonder, like, I'm a completely different person now. I wonder how that interaction would go. And then I'm like, you know what? I would probably like turn into like a shell of my old self and just be completely like who I was back then and just like not want to talk to them. Like, I just can't even imagine how that interaction would go. Cause it's like, who they think I am is whoever I was 8 years ago. And it's like, how do you just come out with like a whole new version of yourself? Even if there's not major differences or anything like that, there are, you know, I don't know. It's just something I think about.
It's often. So much easier to just slip back into like who you were when you knew that person than to like present completely differently. And then like kind of have to explain like this new version of yourself. It's just much easier to just go back 8 years to when you knew that person and just act that same way again.
It's just like a natural response that like your body, your whatever, your like emotions, like go back to it. Like, that's just what I imagine it would be. Just like completely like ignoring anything that's happened since then and being like, oh yeah, hi. I didn't like you then. I probably don't like you now. I don't know. It's just,
I don't know what y'all talking about. I'm like Lady Gaga. I recreate myself every day. I'm a shapeshifter, bitch.
Yeah, but people probably already know that about you. So it's easier for you to present yourself as a shapeshifter.
Did you just call me?
Do you think you're very different, not different at all, a little different from how you were in high school, or do you think not much has changed?
I think I'm relatively the same. I think probably the biggest difference is that I'm a little less impulsive. I think that's kind of a commonality between people that get older. You just get a little bit more mature. I think I'm a lot more emotionally intelligent than I was back then. I feel like I let my emotions rule the hell out of me back in high school, and now I am able to like parse myself a bit more. But I think other than that, I think that I am the same loud and crazy person that I've always been.
Yeah. You know, if it ever happens to me again where I get in a situation like that, I'll pause down. I'll think to myself, what would Quinn Fabre do? And I will go from there. So
that's right.
I'll figure it out. But speaking of Quinn Fabre, let's get to the scene that Amon's been waiting for this whole episode, I'm sure. Kitty and Quinn in the classroom together. Kitty's going to leave, see Santana on the way out and drop, hola. It's like, shut the fuck up, Kitty. And Santana and Quinn are going to have a little conversation here, Amon.
I love this scene so much. So what am I gonna do? Am I gonna recite the whole thing? Because I will.
I don't know. I thought I'd just let you carry us into this however you decided to.
Sneaky little lie I gave him to her. I can sense it thanks to my psychic Mexican third eye. See, this is what my psych professor calls projecting. You're projecting Kitty onto me. Santana, we graduated. It's really time to get over this. Get over what? You being jealous of me. And why would I be jealous of you? And please don't tell me it's because you're in some lame secret Nazi sorority. Look, homecoming weekend came and I went to Jodie Foster's clam bake. And that professor that I was talking about, well, he's 35, smokes a pipe. Well, he's divorcing his wife, who hasn't touched him in years, and I'm dating him. Wow, Twitter update! Quinn is all excited about another guy defining her life. And what are you excited about? Shaking pom-poms in Kentucky? I mean, you want everybody to think that you're such a badass, but really you're just a scared little girl with low self-esteem who's too frightened to chase her dreams. Did Professor Patches teach you that one in between quickies on his office couch? Does he get so turned on by teen moms who barely visit their kid?
Ooh, bravo.
I just imagine Amon going to like bed every night and reciting some of those lines to himself. You know, I'm not even going to say if you told me. I'm just going to say that Amon did that all off memory. Not a single line of that was read off of a screen, off of a paper, off of anything. That was all through memory. And nobody can change my mind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That would have been like, I don't know, like, I don't know where that would have existed. Maybe in like his AIM bio or like MySpace something. That line, did Professor Patches teach you that one in between quickies on his office couch? Like that would have been like the quote in his yearbook. Is that your yearbook quote?
If I hadn't graduated high school before this, then definitely it would have been in there. But I just love that so much. Whoever wrote that line, bravo, bravo, because that was just so
good. And it just... You missed Brittany coming in.
Oh, what are you guys doing? Nothing.
Oh, nothing. Quinn was always a genius slapper.
Quinn always was a genius slapper.
Santana is just so quick-witted.
Mm-hmm. So to just kind of bring this up of like the ratings that we gave this episode back then, do you have any memory of what you gave
this episode?
Yeah,
I think I gave it 0 slushies. I love this episode.
You didn't, almost wow. though.
I didn't.
No, did you
I
gave it
like 5.
A half a slushie, yes. Yeah. And I gave the episode a little bit more. I gave it 1.5 slushies. So looking back, I definitely think, again, not to get too sad again, but I was not in the greatest mood at the time. We recorded this podcast and the prior podcast before this about pretty soon after we found out about Naya back in July. And it was, around that time. So I think in general, my mood was like a little bit down while we were still recording to kind of keep our spirits up and not be too sad about it. But I don't think it worked too much. So I gave it a 1.5. I'm definitely going to adjust that a little bit when we get to the end, as I'm still trying to figure that out. But just the reason I bring it up is because it's like, scenes like this are just so much fun. It's like they have like nothing to do with anything that's going on. Even the Quinn and Puck stuff that had been going on, it's like completely random. Just it's like, here's a scene of your favorite characters interacting, even though it means nothing. It's just like just to see them together. So it doesn't really add anything to like the plot by any means. But if you're only going to have Quinn around for one episode, I guess that's why they're doing it, the way that they're doing this. So I don't know. Just I really enjoy them, even though it doesn't, carry through or anything like, I don't know.
Yeah, this was very exciting to me. As soon as they started talking to each other, I was like, oh my God, is this the scene? I think it is, because I did not know that it was coming. And then I was like, oh, this is. And then just watching it, the pure delight on my face. I mean, as much as Quinn sounds like a crazy person in this conversation, like she is very annoying, but she is keeping up with Santana and just watching them go back and forth the whole time and then ending with the slaps. Oh, perfection. That's what you want when you're writing a TV show. That everything mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah. Cause this scene says so much with like so little, Like I feel like they really hit all the pressure points and all the stuff that we've been missing, because Quinn and Santana have always sort of been at odds, even though they've been friends. And I think that all of what was said was just so great and like straight to the point. Like Quinn's like, okay, stop being jealous of me, we it's time to get over this. And Santana's like, girl, bitch, what are you talking about? Like, you are crazy. And it all culminates into that slap, and it's just like, yes, I got everything I needed from that. I loved it. And of course Santana or Brittany reprising her role in the background once again. Stop the violence. Stop the violence.
mm-hmm. That energy has been missing though, because like we went to season 4 and now we went from having a Quinn and a Santana to having one Kitty. So you can't have that kind of interaction between like two bad bitches. You can only have one with Kitty around. Yeah, so
Marley would not be able to keep up in an argument with Kitty. Like that's just not
Not even close. Like I guess the closest that they would have had is like Unique arguing with Kitty about something like that. Like somebody who can stand their ground, but that just doesn't happen or anything. So you needed this to bring us back to like the Glee characters and the Glee drama that we know and love. Mm-hmm. But to go on, we're going to see that we're getting closer and closer to sectionals. We know that Ryder and Jake are still working through the dance moves. Jake's trying to help him out. They're like watching the video on YouTube to like try to prepare themselves. Marley is getting herself ready back in, backstage she's in the bathroom right now. She's got like the whole bin of whatever she's taking on the sink there, and she's struggling to get ready for the show because she's very, very hungry. Unique is going to show back up, like I was mentioning earlier, Unique, you're back. It's like, I truly don't know where she went, but sure, she's back. And it's time for the show circle, where Joe is going to lead us through one of his favorite Bible verses. Puck's like, all right, just New Testament.
Amon, right? Were you happy that Joe got to speak in this one?
Yes, I'm always glad for Joe content.
There's really not much else to his character, is there, other than he is the Christian person?
That's it. That's pretty much it. He doesn't wear shoes.
We got a DM. I'm trying to find it. From Joseph. I'm gonna call him out because I didn't think Amon was gonna see this, but he said, just started the character studies, excited for the Glee Project, kids. I can't wait to rank all of Joe's solos. ... Oh. They said, keep up the good work. And I said, you're lucky Amon probably won't read this, but then I went ahead and read it on air.
Okay, well let me go and see whoever sent that so I can drag them publicly on Twitter.
No, you don't you dare.
Amon's gonna dox this poor person.
I mean, Joe, yeah, I will strengthen you. I will uphold you with my righteous hand and our righteous dance moves. Amen. All right, Artie.
Shut up, Artie.
Yeah, so we get a show circle from Finn's giving a little bit of a sad statement. I can't remember. You know, or I remember it used to be us. And back in our first performance, it was crazy that, you know, we've come so far and you're going to be up at the top of the mountain just like all of us have been before. This is the first step into getting there. And everyone's like, all right, shut the fuck up. Put hands in. Amazing. So time for sectionals.
Time for sectionals indeed. Thank you, Joe. They should probably never let Joe pray before sectionals again because look what happened.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
It did not work out. Literally the opposite happened.
At sectionals, we get to the judges are nobody significant, nobody worth mentioning here, but we get some Warblers numbers to kick things off. We get Hunter leading the Warblers out, and we get Whistle going into Live While We're Young, which is going to be led by Sebastian. And
I would argue that Whistle is an infinitely worse opening song than Gangnam Style. Infinitely worse. You got all these private school boys singing to people about blowing their whistles, and y'all worried about Gangnam Style? Come on.
Am I worried about it, or am I just worried about how bad it is?
Listen, I had fun with Whistle. Did you see that backflip that Hunter does? Incredible.
Yeah, that guy can flip. He's him and Jacob Artist were probably just flipping off backstage.
My number one wish my whole life was to be able to do a backflip someday, and I hope to achieve that. So Hunter really, made me think that I can achieve my goal one day.
It was fun to see some Warblers numbers mixed in there. I mean, yeah. The episode just has so much going on. That's why, like, going back to the rating, that's why I feel like even if my rating goes down a little bit today, it's not going to be at that zero, just because as much as I enjoy so many things that happen here, it's just like a very big mishmash of things. It's like, here, take your Thanksgiving episode with a lot of fun things that you want to see. It's just like not any kind of, I don't know. It's so many things mixed in. So we get these two performances. I like them both. And it's just like, every time I watch Live While We're Young, I'm like, this is aging worse and worse and worse, just because the One Direction craze is like so much farther in the past, you know, every time you watch it. And I'm like, yeah, it was a fun performance at the time. It probably did well on the charts. But I'm like, now I'm like, oh, thank God we have a Warblers number of Live While We're Young.
Are you solo careers, though? The One Direction?
I can't say I've checked out enough to comment. But from the little that I had heard up, you know, a couple of years when they first started doing solo stuff, I was paying more attention and I was enjoying it. I like all five of them together, separate, whatever makes them happy. Harry Styles, big news guy lately.
Oh, yeah.
Liam Payne is trash.
Really? Oh, jeez.
His album is so bad, guys. It's so bad. It's like the worst pop music I've ever heard. And I'm a pop music aficionado. It's horrible.
I feel like he's focused more on the modeling lately, so maybe he agrees with you.
No, he should agree with me because, woo! But yeah, Harry Styles is pretty good. I like both of his albums. Fine Line is
I really need to check it out. It's been on my list for a while, but I have not yet. I don't know what Louis's up to. Louis was having a kid. I think he had like two kids. Zayn obviously just had a baby with Gigi. It's like my extent of my pop culture knowledge.
I'm like over that kind of thing. He like turned the lights on. Like, what are you doing? Like, he's just
turn the lights on.
Anyway, no mention
of Niall.
Niall, he had some good stuff coming out too. I don't actually know exactly what he's up to, compared to the other four. But when he did have music coming out,
he had that one good song.
I liked it. Yeah, which one?
You're gonna make me remember the name?
No, that wasn't even a dig at him. I was like, I know the song, I just can't think.
I can't remember.
Slow Hands.
Is that the name?
Okay.
I'm thinking of this Town by Niall Horan.
Is that what it's called?
We might be thinking of different songs.
Yo, there are some One Directioners in. Right now, their minds.
Amon, play This Town for us so the audience has a feel of what I'm talking about.
This Town by who? Niall?
Yeah.
Okay.
You gotta sing it.
Yes, this is good. I'd sing it, but I don't really know the words.
I've never heard this song before in my life.
Really? It's been in. Oh my god.
That's not a One Direction song? What are you talking? Okay, it's all blending together for me. I know I like that song. I just, I truly thought that that was a One Direction song, just if you quiz me right now. Okay, I guess I'm failing my One Direction quiz. I'm trying my best in life to keep One Direction relevant.
Oh, you released it
by tweeting about them like once a year, but it doesn't work too well. Okay, good to know.
I'm glad
there's your One Direction update.
I'm glad Niall got some recognition in this One Direction update. Section of
yeah, it's it, the more and more that we're having this conversation, it's really apparent that Harry Styles is the Beyonce of One Direction.
Well, yeah, of course.
Clearly.
Yeah, there could be multiple Beyoncés, right?
No! The entire analogy breaks down.
More than one.
Okay, well, let's break down these barriers and these analogies. Okay, I'm good to close up the One Direction shop here because it is
One Direction fans that are listening are happy about what just happened.
I doubt they are. I'm sure they were screaming at their phones for however.
No, I speak for all of them. I speak for all of us as a collective group of One Direction fans, and we're happy. We're satisfied that that took place and that we got a way more One Direction talk on a podcast than usual outside of, you know, what Harry Styles is up to. Let's go back to New York and check in with the Thanksgiving feast that's happening with Rachel and Kurt and Brody. We had a scene a little bit earlier of Kurt and Brody trying to prepare the turkey, and they were disagreeing about the methods used to cook it. Rachel was like, oh, this is so cute, like my boys, like all together, we're all here, and now here we are, it's time to get ready for dinner. She's they're missing home a little bit, you know, they decided to stay, and now she's thinking about, you know, what if that old part of my life is over, those traditions that I had with my dad. It's like, they're not, you chose to stay in New York one time. Like, go home and see your dads. They're paying for your everything.
Leave it to Rachel to over-dramatize something.
Right. But whatever. It doesn't matter what her old traditions are, because she's developing some new ones, because we're going to have a knock on the door. And who is at the door but Miss Shangela? Now that's Thanksgiving.
Yes. I mean, Thanksgiving would catapult up to my favorite holiday if Shangela ever knocked on my door and came in.
I think Shangela's supposed to be playing herself, right? Like in the credits, it says as herself, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they don't like name drop her or anything. They're not like, oh, Shangela's
right.
here.
Do you
They're
think there
like,
should have been
oh,
more
hi.
Fanfare? Like she walks in and Kurt.
I think
like,
so.
Oh my
yeah,
god,
like,
it's Shangela!
Right. Like if you have her credited as herself, then there should at least be some sort of like, ooh, like it could have just been something as small as Kurt be like, oh my god, I loved you on Drag Race or some shit like that. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't Willem also supposed to be in this scene?
So it's funny you said that, because I was looking that up before this all got started today. I know that like there are, like, and I was researching like Willem Glee, and nothing was popping up. Like, I don't think he's been in an episode of Glee, but he had that whole thing where he worked with Leah Michelle and that whatever was going on.
I thought he said, I could be wrong, and you know, feel free to correct me, anyone out there. But I feel like Willem has said that he was supposed to be either in this episode or in Glee or something, but he like walked off set because Leah Michelle was so terrible.
Maybe that's what was going on. I wouldn't be surprised if he was supposed to be in this.
Which definitely what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
If he got into it with Leah Michelle, that is 100% the reason that she is not in this scene.
I don't know if I've seen Willem like tweet that or if she said it on
on a podcast.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Willem had talked about that on a podcast. Okay, there's like news articles. Like if you search Willem Glee, that's what you're going to find. Willem in 2020 talking about, you know, Willem's experience with Glee and with Leah Michelle and whatnot, but like not on an episode at all. So that is interesting that you bring that up, because I was thinking the same thing. But yeah. So anyway, Shangela is here though. Shangela and of course Isabel is going to get on the phone with Kurt. You will not believe the struggles that I couldn't catch a cab. It's raining. And she makes her way. She shows up, and let's have a kiki. Lock the door.
Before we dive into this, can I just make one small observation that I didn't notice? I've only noticed it until now. When they do the show circle, and Joe is praying, everyone has their eyes closed, and Blaine is the only one that is like, "Yeah, I'm not about this." And I've never noticed that ever.
I did not notice that either. And I watched the episode twice yesterday.
Yeah, like as soon as he goes to pray, he like looks at him like, okay, well, whatever. And everybody else has their eyes, at least everybody else that we see has their eyes closed, and he does not. He's just like, okay.
That's probably for Kurt. Kurt, who famously anti-religion, Blaine's like, this is me standing in solidarity.
Yeah, never noticed it. Okay, anyway, kiki.
Let's have a kiki.
I want to have a kiki. Lock the doors tight. Let's have a kiki, motherfucker. I'm going to let you have it. Let's have a kiki. I want to have a kiki start to work. Let's have a kiki. We're going to turn and work and start. And ha, honey.
So just must be nice to be Rachel and afford this giant place and Kurt as well that, you know, they can invite over the entire neighborhood. Of course, watching this is giving us all the, oh my God, it's Corona time, but it's not Corona time feelings of having that many people in an apartment. It's pretty crazy, but still just fun to watch every time.
It is very fun. I forget where you guys came down on this. Were you guys big fans of this number the first time you covered this episode?
It's super duper outrageous, but I love it. Every time I like see a list of like worst Glee songs, worst Glee covers, whether it's Watch Mojo or whatever the hell, someone on the internet is always having this song in like the worst. And I'm like, you guys are just haters. Like, yes, it's a little absurd. It's kind of crazy that Sarah Jessica Parker has been recruited and this is one of the songs that she gets to sing on the fucking show. Like, whose decision was that? But like in terms of like the show and like the episode itself, it's so fun. Like, come on.
Yeah, I agree. The first time I watched it, I was like, oh my God, this is really stupid. What are they doing? But the more I watch it, the more I had fun with it. And just these last couple of times I watched, I had to like rewind it because I was having so much fun watching it. Like in any other episode of Glee, this would be the most absurd thing that happens. But of course, they do Gangnam Style later in the episode. Mm-hmm. So it will not take the title for this episode. But yeah, everything that is like so insane, but like in a good way, like just the fact that it's mashed up with this song called Turkey Lurkey Time and just the dancing and the fact that there's all these people in the apartment. It's
yeah, they're all having the kiki and all of a sudden Rachel breaks in with it's Turkey Lurkey time and everybody looks at her like, what the hell is going on here? And they just go with it. They're like, all right, let's have some Turkey Lurkey time.
Rachel wants to insert Turkey Lurkey time for some reason. I guess we're going to do it. They're all dancing. Brody's even having a good time.
He doesn't know what's going on, but he's down for it. He's never seen a drag queen in his life.
It's very funny. It's a very funny scene.
This is some Ohio country bumpkin bullshit because fucking Kurt joins in too, like, turkey, lurkey, goosey. I'm like, what the hell are y'all doing?
Kurt's sitting Brody down and snapping.
And you know what? Like, another reason why Kurt should have gotten the gold star in this episode, or should have gotten one, because like he took this Thanksgiving that Rachel was actively trying to ruin by separating them from their friends and family back home and just hanging out with Brody. He decided to invite Isabel over, which led to all of this, which is making it now one of the more memorable Thanksgiving in their lives.
You know, the more we talk about it, the more I'm feeling like Kurt was definitely robbed of a star here.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, that's how I'm feeling. The
only note about this song is I wish that Shangela had been the one to say hunty and not...
Yeah, absolutely.
We have Michelle quacking out that hunty is like, ew.
It was very cringy. Like, I didn't like her saying
that. I wanted to take like a bottle of water to her face. Not...
That was probably the exact moment Willem walked off set. He was like, I can't do this anymore.
Like rehearsal happening and yeah, I'm out. So shout out to the person who walked in next to Shangela, who was probably where Willem was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then got upgraded to a front and center role for at least that one scene. A lot of fun. Turkey Lurkey time. Definitely make sure you guys are playing that for your families or for your whoever you are spending your Thanksgiving with.
I've yet to still hear the actual like the original version of that song. I've only ever heard the
group. I don't know what it is, but yep. Just thinking about Rachel's turn singing is making me laugh.
Yeah, they're all let's have a kiki. It's Turkey Lurkey time and everyone's like, what the fuck?
That's what I'm saying. They're from New York. They don't play that shit. What are you doing?
It's like, I've never, you know, New York isn't known for like its fantastic mashups at drag bars, like or anything. It's like Rachel's bringing these mashups from Ohio in the Glee Club all the way to New York, and people are like, "What is going on? That's not the song we were singing." They're not watching Glee.
Thank God,
so,
Kurt,
all right.
You're up on that one. Could have gotten.
Thank
ugly.
God. Speaking of Kurt, Kurt's got to get on the phone, call his boo back home. Talk about their feelings. Kurt goes outside on the balcony. It was raining 5 minutes ago before Isabel got there, but that's fine. Maybe he wiped it down before he sat down and was hanging out there. The street below him, you know, it's a nice little vibe out there. perfect for some emotional talk on the phone with Blaine, who is going to just stand right next to a ladder and let his heart out while the two of them talk to each other about how, you know, they miss each other. And it's like, we've said I'm sorry enough times and blah, 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 blah. But Kurt's going to come home for Christmas, and it's giving Blaine some hope, some optimism compared to where they had been. So nice to see Thanksgiving. It's like all the touching, heartfelt moments that you get from a Thanksgiving episode of a TV show usually have to do with like family, right? Usually have to do with like people seeing their loved one for the first time. Hey Arnold, was that Thanksgiving?
That's the go-to reference.
I don't want to even say his name because I can't remember off the top of my head. Sees his daughter. I feel like that's Thanksgiving. Maybe it's Christmas. I'm leaving this all in, even though I could be sounding like a total idiot.
I can picture what you're talking about, but I can't. I don't
exactly
have, like, a great memory of Hey Arnold.
Well, you get what I'm saying. Usually the touching moment in an episode about the holidays. And this is just these two talking about, you know, how Blaine cheated. And this is like the touching moment of the episode that's supposed to like bring us back to like feeling something heartwarming before we go to see the sectional performance. So
it seems like you're like yada yadaing it. But I did think the scene was cute.
I think I yada yada a lot of claim content, especially in this part of the show. But if you have anything on it, please.
I'm sure there's people out there
that would appreciate it.
Well, they both sold it well. Blaine was obviously really happy. I don't know. My heart melted a little bit, but I guess I like them.
It's definitely like out of all the Klain scenes from this era, one of the better ones. Some good acting from both actors here to like
make
you believe that, you know, you're having that touching moment. But it's still like, I can't help but think about everything surrounding it, where it's just, you know, the Klain content is just going down the crapper for me in this time. But yeah, that's what's going on with those two. We're backstage. Marley is having a moment of her own where she's obviously hurting badly. She's very hungry. She's not admitting to anybody what's wrong. Jake is trying to comfort her. Ryder's going to come up and interrupt the moment, talking about how, Jake, you need to be the one to take the dance solo with Brittany. It can't be me. You're good. I'm not. Marley, how's it going? What
are you like? I get that this is like a touching gesture from like Riley, but the timing couldn't be weirder. Like, he literally interrupts this heart-to-heart that they're having. And Jake is even like, can you do this literally any other time?
He's like, no.
No, I can't. You need to take the dance solo. Like, what are you talking about? It's like, first of all, he leaves it to completely last minute. Like, we're about to go on. You need to take this solo.
We're about to go on.
And he literally just interrupts this moment between it. And Marley's just like sitting there. It's so weird that they chose to do this.
Yeah, like this is like, imagine like they showed up at like, okay, no, I don't need to go to like dark places or anything, but like with like Kurofsky in the season 3 big episode for him, like imagine like somebody just showed up and was having a casual conversation while Kurofsky was like, you know, Marley is moments away from passing out. Like, this is like a serious thing, obviously. Like, as much as we're joking all around, some things that are surrounding it, like she hasn't been eating, like very unhealthy, what's going on here. And, you know, she's struggling with it in this moment. She's talking to Jake, who's trying to like, you know, get answers out of her. He hasn't been able to get her to admit anything that's been going on or be open about it. And then Ryder, comes up and he's just like, so this dance, like,
first of all, just like creepily like standing behind a curtain listening to that at first, and then just like jumps in.
See, the thing that I never understood about this is that Ryder knows why Marley is feeling like this. He knows that she's been throwing up. He knows. Why doesn't he say anything here? Like, he's obviously trying to like save her from having to admit it to Jake, because he can tell that she doesn't want to say anything. But like, it just, the fact that like we never get anything else from this storyline. Like, once this happens, we get like a little like tongue lashing to Kitty from Santana at the beginning of the next episode, and then it kind of gets dropped later on, and then Ryder never talks about it. It just seems really, really strange to me.
So unlike Ryder to just drop a storyline out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Ryder. It's time for sectionals now that we've established who's going to be the dancing soloist at the front of the stage. That's all that's important right now. Not anything going on with Marley. And we go onto the stage where we get the performance that Amon, that critics cannot stop raving about. Critics being Amon, Gangnam Style. It's time. New Directions featuring Tina Cohen Chang. And look, I watched it this time. Every time I watch it, you know, I always look at it from the perspective of like, okay, this is a song that I think is ridiculous. This is a like the whole thing that is happening here. It's completely insane that this is going on the show right now. But this time I sat down, I was like, okay, we've already talked about it and I've already given my perspective on how ridiculous this is. Let me watch it and look for the good. And so I can come in here and comment on the good. Jake and Brittany look great. Of course. They're doing some fun stuff up at the front of the stage. And then Jake doing his backflips, making Matt jealous and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. All great stuff there. Tina sounds great. She sounds wonderful. You know, of course, anytime that Tina gets to sing in any of these competitions, it's fun. And the dancing that all of the rest of them were doing, you know, very basic steps, but they all looked good. Obviously, very synchronized. Everybody was looking okay. The confetti cannons were fun. It's just like we just had the most wild episode of the show with so many different things happening, so many things to process from a million different characters. And then we get to the end and we get this like upbeat, fun performance with confetti. So I was like, okay, I can see the value in this. I can see the fun in it. That doesn't change mostly how I feel about it overall, but I do see some fun. Is that okay? Is that good?
I'll take it. It's fine. You know what? I can be the lone wolf here loving this performance and singing his praises till the end of time. It's fine. I just think it's so great. Like, all the things you listed, the Brittany and the Jake of it all. I mean, he's doing flips and she's doing, like, those awesome PK turns. Like, it just looks so good. I love the fact that they actually borrowed the choreography from the Kingdom style. Like, this is before the K-pop advent, right? Like, K-pop was just beginning to bleed its way into American culture. And Glee sort of like got on top of it before the rest of us did. And I just love it. I think it's timely. It's obviously a popular song. There's so much comedy in it. It just makes you laugh. But they also sound good. Like they're taking it seriously. You know what I mean? Like that's the part that like makes it enjoyable for me, because it would be so easy to just go full comedy and, you know, just go for the laughs. But like it's both. It's both comedy and they sound good and they look good. Like it's well-oiled, it's choreographed, it's probably one of the most lively numbers the New Directions has ever done, and that's saying something. I love the fact that we get that little wink in there from Kitty to the judge, and I love that Quinn noticed it after giving her that advice. I just love it. And then it all comes crashing down in the most dramatic way possible as everything gets distorted from Marley's view, and then she faints. It's just perfect. I love it. I just love this performance.
For me, I mean, the dancing is good. They obviously love confetti. I'm not knocking dancing or confetti. That's all good. It's just the fact that this is Gangnam style. And we're, like, it's, to me, it's just so cringy and weird. And like, I'm just asking like why, and I'm really confused, and not in the good way. Like I am with like,
because it's 2012.
Geeky. Well, not every viral video or song has to be made into a Glee performance, which is the problem I also have with What Does the Fox Say, which is my least favorite Glee song of all time, but we're not here to talk about that. But
well, that was bullshit. That performance was bullshit because it was obviously kind of just like thrown in there. There was no thread leading up to it. There was nothing. But at least with this episode, we knew they were doing Gangnam Style.
Yes, and they have choreography for it, and they know the words, and that's all good. But like, this is a competition song, and I'm supposed to take this seriously. Like, at least I'm going back to the other absurd moment and Let's Have a Kiki. This is done in the comfort of Kurt and Rachel's apartment. It's supposed to not be taken seriously. They're supposed to just be having a fun, good time. This is on the competition stage. You're trying to win sectionals and you're doing Gangnam Style? Like, I'm so confused.
Why not?
No, we should be asking why. We should not be asking why not.
It is a fun when number you're making and it's only one. It's only one of three. We don't know what.
It's the only one they got to do. This was their go-to. If something happens, that is
Kitty and Marley's fault. That is like, all up on those.
It's
two.
Kitty's fault. Let's not blame. I'm gonna blame Kitty for this one, but I guess a
sure,
little
fine, yeah. Kitty, but, it was okay. Kitty's fault.
But they know. But we don't. This is their lead-off song. They know if something happens and someone passes out on stage and we only get to do one.
Oh come on! No one is putting together.
This is the one we
contingency plans for people passing out.
I'm so confused. I'm so confused. I think when you guys first covered this, Ligori texted me and asked if this was a bottom five Glee performance, and I emphatically agreed. I was like, yes, it is. 100%.
No, I think because after we got off recording that episode, I felt like a crazy person myself because Amon was raving about it. I was talking about how awful I thought it was. And I got off and I was like, I just need to talk to somebody about this. So I texted Matt immediately and I was like, I think I said, what do you think of Glee's Gangnam Style? And he was like, I thought it was really dumb. And I was like, okay, that's like all I really needed to hear. And I think, yeah, we wanted to talk about how it was a potential bottom five performance.
But the argument that I keep hearing, which to me doesn't make that, but doesn't hold much water in this instance, is that, oh my God, they're just doing it because Gangnam Style is really popular right now. And I'm like, yes, but they're quite obvious about that. It's not like they're trying to obfuscate the issue here. Like, they are doing it because it is Gangnam Style and it is super duper popular and it's a crowd pleaser. The crowd loved this song and it's just the opening number. It is just like, it just whets your appetite and it's like, oh my God, what are they going to do next? You opened up with Gangnam Style. That was quite ambitious. What are you going to do next? It's like, if you think about it from a show business point of view, this was a spectacular choice, if you can pull it off. And in my opinion, they pulled it off. And so, like, yes, you know, from the outside looking in, like, if you're someone who has never watched Glee, ever, and you sit down and you watch Thanksgiving, and that's the first episode that you're watching, you're gonna be like, what the fuck is this show? What is this? But, like, as someone who's been following the show for a very long time, and is quite used to the culture that is Glee, I think that this fits so well, and I feel like people are so much harsher on it than they need to be. I think that this is such a great cover. Now, I think that there is something to be said about the fact that they have Jenna Ushkowitz up there singing this song. Yes, there's like, okay, like, you just gave this song to her because she's the only Asian there. Sure, that's a little cringy. But at the same time, we can say the same thing about Mercedes and singing every song that any big black woman has ever sung. You know what I mean? They do that kind of shit. It's just, that's just what happens. But I think that with that being said, it's still a good performance. Like, Jenna Ushkowitz kills it. She kills it.
Yeah. Okay. That's true. And she does. But for me, I guess just the fact that they make it super obvious doesn't really make it any less cringy for me watching it. And I will grant you, I did not watch this when it first aired in 2012, when Gangnam Style was a huge thing. Maybe if I did watch it then and I was like, oh yeah, I'd be all about it, I don't know.
Nope.
But watching it years after the fact, I was like, oh really, they really went into this viral sensation for this. And again, for that, I know you don't like that argument, but another argument, like, one of the big things for me is just the fact that I think they maybe could have done this in a fun way for me that made it more palatable if it was not a competition song. Like, I feel like the competition songs you kind of are supposed to take seriously. Like, obviously there is an element of fun in them, but I think you're supposed to take them more seriously than other songs. And if they did Gangnam Style just like as a little, like, I don't know, team building exercise in the choir room or something, like maybe if it ties into the story somehow, I don't know, maybe I could get behind it. But just the fact, like, Finn's bright ideas, like, for sectionals, we're gonna do Gangnam Style, and and this is their big thing for second. Like, it's not something that I responded well to.
And that is okay. We are all fine.
If you compare it to the rest of the numbers that we saw from the other teams, like, come on. Like, the other, like, this is that Mormon team singing, she'll be coming around the mountain when she comes. Like, come on now. Like, Gangnam Style is far and away better.
We're not supposed to take that. I was still thinking my
critique for the freaking warblers, for them to be talking about blowing their whistles. You want to see a bunch of teenage boys up there talking about blow my whistle?
I think it's very telling that the warblers put that performance on, and the warblers are the group that were taken the most seriously out of the three. They can get away with
whistle they didn't get to finish. They had no choice but to give it to the warblers, because you're not going to give it to the warblers. They're talking about banjos and goats and goat cheese or whatever the hell they were singing about.
You guys should go
to the damn warblers.
What do you think? What are they following up? Because we don't know. What are they following up Gangnam Style with? What's the second song?
We don't know. But it was a nice opener, okay?
How do you transition from Gangnam Style into anything else without people being like, what? Like, imagine doing Gangnam Style and then doing Don't Stop Believing. I struggle to think of any song that logically makes sense to go after Gangnam Style. But
yeah,
anyway,
I mean, it probably would have been the closing number in most scenarios, and it was the closing number because they only got to do one. So there's that. Yeah, weigh in the comments.
Sound off in the comments.
Let us know what you think.
We can reveal to you now, Mom. This is actually the reason I came on, was so that we could team up on you for this part.
Wow. You know what? I agree with Finn's reasoning here. He literally says that this is supposed to be the showstopper. And it is, because it's such a shocking choice to go with. But they pull it off. It's a good number. It is. Okay. It just, objectively speaking, it's a good number. If you don't like the song, that's one thing. But in the context of this performance, it is a solid performance. It just is.
What we're going to do is, after this podcast goes up, I'm going to put a poll up when the podcast goes up, I'm going to say, like, what are your opinions of Gangnam Style? Like, whatever the options are. And then a couple days later, we'll put up a link to the YouTube video. We'll say, make sure you watch it again. If you just listened to the podcast and didn't watch it again, make sure you listen to the podcast, watch the video, and then I'm going to do another poll. Has your opinion been swayed? I want to know if anybody, because what did I just say earlier about how I rewatched it and I found things to take away from it? And maybe if I once had it as like a 1 out of 10 on the scale of good Glee songs, maybe now I'm up to a 3 or a 4 based on the persuasion that Amon's, you know, had here. I've persuaded you to some songs being better. You persuaded me. So I think that's what we're doing here. I don't know how far Matt's come up on the scale of anything for Gangnam Style. We can get to that in a second, but I genuinely am curious to hear if anybody feels like rewatching it, hearing what Amon has to say about it, if we've come around to anything else on it. Hopefully this is a good preview for you all of what your Thanksgiving dinners will be like, with all of the arguing back and forth about anything that's going on. That's just, we're trying to bring the true Thanksgiving feeling to your tables, even if it may not be happening this year. Do either of you have any final thoughts on Gangnam Style before we
I've laid it all out on the table. I don't need to say okay anymore.
Well, we might actually have to say more because we do have a segment now that we are doing when we rewatch episodes of this show, where instead of picking out our favorite songs, we are now picking out our least favorite songs. So, Matt, do I even have to ask?
No, I don't think it's any secret where I'm going. It should be obvious that my worst song is Gangnam Style. I said it was bottom five. I will stand by that for now. I have not had this, you know, epiphany moment that Ligoria's had yet where I go back to watch it and try to see the good in it. Maybe when we revisit this episode again for Thanksgiving next year, I'll come back and have different opinions. But, you know, it's just unnecessary, dumb, cringy, overall bad, everything I said. We don't need to reopen the argument we just had 5 minutes ago. But yeah, Gangnam Style, lock it in. My least favorite song.
Okay. I'll go next because obviously I'm on the same kind of wavelength, and I, at the risk of Amon never following me back on Twitter again, I am also going to say that that is my least favorite of the episode. And just to kind of like set the precedent going forward of like songs that are eligible, let's say the song has to be released. Like last time when we did this, I think we all had said Damn It Janet was our least favorite for Rocky Horror. That is a release song. Like Over the River and Through the Woods does not count. It was not released into the to actually be in anybody's music feeds. So we got to go with these 6 songs, which, sorry to steal your job, Amon, but I'm already talking, is Homeward Bound Home, Come See About Me, Whistle, Live While We're Young, Let's Have a Kiki Turkey Lurkey Time, and Gangnam Style. So we got those 6 songs. Out of those 6, I have to say that Gangnam Style remains down there as my least favorite of the episode. So let's get all the negativity out of the way there. As Amon, what would your pick be? I assume, actually, no, I know what it is, but What would it be?
It's got to be Live While We're Young, or it could be Whistle. Both of them could be interchangeable to me, honestly. I'm just not... I'd probably go with Live While We're Young. It's just generic-ass boy band pop that's just, like, not for me. And it's just, like, no, it's boring. It's just... It's boring. I would not...
So let me be clear for a second. The song that you were trying to argue would have been the worst song would have been Whistle, because a bunch of teenage boys are singing about blowing their whistle, and then it wasn't even your least favorite.
But yeah, but I'm I said they could be interchangeable, but I'm also talking about like within context of the show. Like if I'm speaking like in a vacuum, and I'm just if we're just simply talking sonically, which is my least favorite, probably Live While We're Young, because of the fact that, like I said before, it's just generic boy band pop, but at least with Whistle, because they're doing an a cappella version of it, there's a lot of like harmonies and some instrumentation and some arrangement that's pretty good in my opinion, sonically speaking. But like in the context of the show, then yeah, maybe I would say Whistle, because ew. Like, no, I don't want to watch you guys sing this song to me.
All right. That's our least favorite songs. If you missed the Halloween episode that we did with Rocky Horror, we're going to change up some of these segments at the end. So we still have stuff to talk about, but not copying exactly what we talked about last time. But as far as slushy ratings go, we're kind of keeping it the same. We're going to look back on our slushy rating, and if we want to make an adjustment here, then we're more than able to do so while we rewatch it. But Matt, you didn't give a slushy rating because you didn't watch this episode with us the first time. So how would you feel about this episode if you remember the scale? I know it's been so long.
Yeah, I think I got it. This is a solid episode. Like, I'm famous for loving when the alumni come back, so this is going to be, you know, pumps it up for me there. Also love that there's really not any adults in this one. It focuses on the kids, aside from that one scene where Mr. Shu makes an appearance with Emma and Sue in the audience. You have the reunion of the Unholy Trinity, so that's also good. But, you know, there's also some negatives, obviously. I gotta give at least one full slushy just for the inclusion of Gangnam Style. And then for the Jake, Marley, and Ryder stuff, I didn't care for it. So I considered giving another slushy for that, but they don't focus too much on it. You know, just the whole stuff of who gets the dance solo and, you know, so it's just really dumb for me. So I will only give it a half slushy on that. So I will agree with your rating from the first time you did this, Ligori, and give it 1.5 slushies.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. That's, yep, that was my initial rating. It's going to change a little bit here. Because rewatching it, I just, you know, found a lot of things that I enjoyed in it. It is a mishmash rather than, you know, one straight storyline kind of thing. So, you know, it's like, do I like all the individual pieces of what's going on here, all the performances? Like, how much does that weigh into, you know, my overall enjoyment of it? So I gave it a 1.5. I'm definitely down to at least a 1, but I'm definitely leaning also towards the half slushy. It's definitely not, or I shouldn't even say definitely, but it's not going to be perfect. I think for now, I feel comfortable landing at a half a slushy. I just had a lot of fun watching. Opening the episode with Homeward Bound Home already puts me in my feelings for the entire way through. Having the alumni around is just so much fun. The Let's Have a Kiki. It's just a lot of ridiculousness. Of course, we get the Blaine and Kurt scene that you said, you know, you brought up as like, you know, one of their better ones. And I do agree with that. So I have a hard time like picking out things that I genuinely didn't like much. Like I said, when I gave it that rating the first time, I don't think I was in the best mood, mind state, whatever you would say. So I'm going to drop it a whole slushy rating and give it only a half slushy here.
Wow.
So Aman, what are you thinking? You gave it a half slushy the first time around.
I'm like really, really wanting to give it zero slushies, but I think that it's just like my love of the holidays and the fact that Thanksgiving is 4 days away and I'm just, you know, really sentimental. So I'm really trying to not let that influence. So I think I'm just going to keep it at 0.5 because there are still things in this episode that are a little hard to swallow and just, you know, so I'm trying to be reasonable about it. So I'll keep it at 0.5.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds good to me. And of course, we're also going to close things out with our shoe star, which if you missed it last time, it's not a gold star. We gave out gold stars in the past for the best person in the episode, the person who we just wanted to give a gold star to. Now we're giving out the shoe star for whoever sucks the most, whoever was the worst. And Matt, I'll start off with you again. While I did offer up a suggestion, I do see other names on the board that I've considered. Where are you leaning? What are you thinking?
You kind of mentioned earlier that there's kind of not one person that jumps out really, because I don't know, this is mostly an episode where I have positive feelings about anyone. You mentioned Rachel, but I didn't even really flag up how manipulative she was being to Kurt as I was watching the episode. I thought maybe Kitty, just because of the whole thing with Marley, but we don't see a lot of that in this episode. Enough of it for me to give her the shoe star. So, I mean, I don't think Aman's gonna like this, but it comes back, you know, Finn was the idiot that suggested they do Gangnam Style.
Oh no.
For that, it got a full slushy out of me, and it's the most, it's the worst part of the episode, and Finn directly caused it, so I am going to give Finn the shoe star for even suggesting that this should happen.
That is very funny and not at all where I expected it could go. Aman is never letting you back on the podcast. We'll have to work other arrangements to be able to get you back in here. All right. So when you mentioned Kitty, that's the other person that I had been thinking about. Obviously, I mentioned Rachel early on, but Kitty is the whole reason that this happens with Marley. She is the one pulling all this stuff on Quinn, with, you know, talking about how Jake is trying to be this and do that or whatever, and distracting everybody from the real issues of what's going on, which is what's happening to Marley. So I have a hard time, you know, thinking why Kitty shouldn't get it, but also Rachel being that manipulative, Rachel. It's hard to say. I mean, Rachel's definitely going to get a bunch of these if we keep rewatching episodes. So she doesn't have to get this first one here. I think overall, you know, who is the worst person between the two of them? Rachel's going through a rough time, but Kitty is being an absolutely awful person right off the bat here. So I think I will end up landing on Kitty. Aman, what do you got?
I think Kitty's probably the best choice here. Yeah, Kitty, because, I mean, it's all her fault. They never got to finish sectionals because she decided to be horrible to Marley. And I still have a side eye at Ryder, though, because, like, why didn't you just say anything? Why didn't you, like, you could have helped in the situation and you didn't do it. So, yeah.
Right.
And I'm starting to feel like some of that motivation was because he was trying to show Molly that he was trying to cover for her and be close to her because he still likes her and trying to snatch her from Jake, which makes me kind of not like him more. So, fuck it. I'm going to give it to Ryder. I just talked to myself.
Ooh, okay.
Explain it again, though, now that you're actually giving it to him.
Because I feel like he didn't say anything to help Marley because he wants to be with Marley in his own twisted way, if that makes sense. Like, you, like, knew what was going on. You knew that she was in this state. And you probably could have put two and two together that it was probably because of Kitty, because you know that Kitty is not a very nice person. I just feel like he had agency here and he didn't take it. Which is
and then nice. Showing up at the end in a moment that Marley was struggling pretty badly and saying, hey, Jake, we got to talk about the dance right now.
Yeah, like, it's just like, okay, bro, like, what are you doing? Like, you could have, I don't know, I just didn't, I don't like that. Inaction is still bad, in my opinion.
The shoe star is fun because so many people can be bad in an episode rather than, like, on a, you know, you're looking for the gold star, you often get, like, the same answers because it's usually, like, obvious who the hero might be in an episode, but mm-hmm. landing on three different answers I think is super fun. So Finn gets a shoe star from Matt for an awful song selection. Kitty gets one from me for everything she does with Marley, and Ryder gets one for everything she does to not help Marley, even though he knew that there was something going on. So, wow, all of these characters are pretty terrible, huh? All right. Sounds good. Sounds like a fun time at McKinley's Thanksgiving or the New York Thanksgiving. Matt, thank you for joining us again. I do hope we have you back on someday. I guess I can't promise it, but I hope that we can
No matter what Amon says, anytime you want me back, just text me and I'm sure I will be available.
All right. Sounds good. I know you actually do have a recent podcast appearance to plug.
Oh, I do, actually. My friends have a relatively new podcast called The Hoppy Boys, where they talk about a different beer every week, and they had me on to talk about my favorite alcoholic beverage, Angry Orchards, along with me and my friend Jesse were on. So if you like me and you like to hear people talk about Angry Orchards, you can check out The Hoppy Boys wherever you get your podcasts.
Am I correct that you recorded this a while ago?
Yes, we recorded it the day before Halloween, I believe, and it just came out.
Not that long ago.
Yeah, well, a month ago. Well, not even a month
ago. For some reason, I thought it was like a long time ago that you guys did this, because I remember you talking about it, and I was like, oh, I was going to look for the feed, and then I couldn't find it.
This was, I was on the first episode reviewing Natural Light.
You've been back already. Wow, returning guest.
Yeah, I'm the first returning guest. I did Natural Light for the first episode, and then I came back for the 10th episode to do Angry Orchard. So,
all right,
you can check that out.
And on Twitter, at
MattyFresh24.
Fresh. 24.
Oh, you got it.
MattyFresh24. Follow Matt on Twitter. Let him know. Let us know. We're going to do some of those polls and we're going to figure out. We're going to get to the bottom of this Gangnam Style situation that we have on our hands here. Amon, where can everybody find us? And any last thoughts here on this episode or anything?
Justice for Gangnam Style. You can follow us at Choir Room Pod on Twitter. You can follow me at Amon Adwin. You do not have to follow Matt at Matt Ligori. Make sure that you leave us star ratings and reviews wherever you get your podcasts. We'll read them aloud on the show. Do we have any right now or no?
Nothing for today. It's always a very fun time when we do have new ones, but not today. Hopefully for some of the reviews that are coming out in your feed, the character reviews, that is, and we'll have actual audience reviews to throw in there at the end, but nothing for today. Of course, the character studies have been going on, have been a lot of fun, that have been up in your feed up until this point. I believe that this podcast will be up on Thanksgiving, if not the day before, but there will still be another character study coming sometime a couple days after into the weekend. So TBD on who that will be, but that'll be there for you. Hopefully you guys are enjoying whatever you have coming up for Thanksgiving. Let us know if you're listening to us on Thanksgiving. I'm sure that there are people out there that aren't doing a whole lot. So hopefully you have this or you have anything else to bring you some comfort.
If you guys are listening while you're cooking, don't add that extra salt. Don't do it. Don't do it. You think you need it, but you don't. Don't do it. Have a very, very, very happy Thanksgiving. Yes, a little bit of a note to myself as well. Have a very good Thanksgiving. And y'all know what's coming up after Thanksgiving, bitch. Y'all know what's coming up.
What's coming up? Black Friday?
All right. Until next time, guys. We'll glue you later.